Earners, what's up? Look, the holiday season is supposed to be about joy and celebration, but let's be real. Finances could take a serious hit this time of year. Have you ever found yourself dipping into your savings or even adding to your credit card debt just to cover some holiday expenses? I know I've been there, and those months of catching up afterward, they're not fun. But what if you could approach this holiday season differently, without the stress? That's where Chime comes in. With a Chime checking account, you get features designed to help you stay in control of your money, like no monthly or maintenance fees, fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, and my personal favorite, getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Think about it. No surprise fees draining your account and the flexibility to handle those holiday expenses when they pop up. Let me tell you about SpotMe. I remember a time when an overdraft fee hit me just because my timing was off with my paycheck. It was frustrating and unnecessary. With Chime, you don't have to deal with that. SpotMe lets you overdraft up to $200 without fees, and your next deposit just covers the balance. And here's something unique. Chime is all about community. You can even get a boost from a friend to temporarily increase your SpotMe limit. And when you help a friend out, they can boost you back. It's a real give and take that makes managing your finances feel a little more supportive. Millions of Chime members are making financial progress every day. To date, Chime has spotted members over 32 billion in transactions through SpotMe. And with access to over 50,000 fee-free ATMs, you can take care of your money anytime, anywhere. So enjoy the holidays while keeping your financial goals on track with Chime. Open your account in just 2 minutes at chime.com/earn. That's chime.com/earn. Chime. Feels like progress. Banking services and debt card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Direct deposit timing depends on submission of payment file. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limit. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs and for OTC withdrawals.
When you're with Amex Business Platinum, you have the card that helps you do more of what you love, like a flexible spending limit that adapts with your business. And with 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, going the extra mile for your business is even more rewarding. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Not all purchases will be approved. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/AmexBusiness.
Yeah, yeah. We back, we live.
Let's get it.
What's going on, folks? Happy Thursday. It is a chilly day here in the Northeast. Shout out to everybody everywhere in the world. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us tonight, man. And you're in for an absolute treat. Bitcoin is the talk of the town.
That's a fact. That's a fact. So much stuff going on. And, you know, we've done this a few times, but we'll do it again. I think this is actually the third time where we kind of had this conversation. I know we did it during the pandemic with Justin. And I believe we did it one other time where we've talked about crypto a lot, but we had like actual boot camp as far as like explaining it, breaking it down.
Yeah.
So this is a time to do it again, you know. Yeah. Every 2 years, it seems like we have this conversation because that's when the bull run happens. But so many people are interested in cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin, and it's intimidating. I put it on Instagram. 83% of Americans still are not invested in any form of cryptocurrency ever. So, you know, today we're going to go over the ins and outs, everything you need to know so you can make an informed decision if you want to start to actually put some money into crypto.
Yeah, that's a fact. The more that we see it run up, the more people are interested. It starts coming up on every news feed. Your parents are talking about it. Your grandparents are talking about it. Your kids want to know about it. But most people don't have the education. And so it's funny. I read some comments today. Like, y'all finally want to talk about it now that it's up over 100,000. I'm like, youngin, you haven't been here since the beginning. We actually spoke about it in one of our early episodes with Fitzpatrick. Was it Fitzpatrick?
Charles Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. So that was early on. Green Table, Shotgun Mics. We were talking about cryptocurrency even back then. This is 2019. So if you're a newcomer, go back and do a little homework. But tonight we're going to give you, this is
this is one of the ones where you're going to get all the information that you need to know to make informed decisions going forward. So like we said, we're never going to tell you what to invest in. We're going to give you all the information that you can make an intelligent decision. And tonight is one of those ones where intelligence will be displayed at a high level.
All right. So let's let it marinate. Hit the like button and share. So we're going to bring our good friend up, Caleb Silver, who is the editor-in-chief. Oh, here he goes.
There he is.
Quick. What's going on, my brother?
What's going on? Got the look at that. Look at that. Look uniform. Got the water bottle.
You see that, buddy? Cool. You see that shirt?
The good EYO polo.
They don't make these anymore. These are special.
Limited. Very rare. That's very rare, actually.
Stitched.
Caleb, somebody who we connected with years ago, and just a brilliant mind as far as in the world of finance, editor-in-chief in Investopedia, a site that I've been using for years, even before Earn Your Leisure. It's an encyclopedia for anything financially related. So if you have questions, like, you could ask it, what's the blockchain? What's crypto? What's EETF? And Investopedia has all the answers. And we connected with Caleb, and then we did an episode, and then we had him on Market Mondays, and we had him in London when we did InvestFest Europe. Then we had him at InvestFest a few times. So, I mean, he's done so many different things as far as in-person events.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just been a great resource. He's been able to connect us with a lot of great people. A lot of, you know, high regard people, you know, come through his network. So he's been somebody that we've definitely, you know, utilized him as a resource and appreciate him for sure. So when we wanted to have this conversation, I wanted to just keep it very neutral. And I want to have, you know, a sway towards one coin or try to get people to invest. Like, this is purely for informational purposes only. We're not trying to actually, you know, pump a meme coin.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to sell you anything. We're just trying to give you some information. So he was the perfect person because, you know, that's right up his alley. So here he is. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
It is an honor to be here. You guys have done so much for financial education and for spreading the good word, fighting the good fight out there more than anybody I know. And it's really an honor to contribute to the platform. I always feel blessed to be able to join you and your audiences. So thanks for having me. And this is pure education. This is what I'm good at. I am not great at picking the next great meme coin. I'm terrible at that, but I am really good at trying to understand it because I want to be an educated investor no matter what I do. And this is an area where we all need more and more education because the hype machine is in full effect. You say you're not here to pump coins. They don't need your help. Those coins are being pumped plenty on their own, plenty of hot air under this market. But there's a lot to learn and a lot to understand. So I appreciate you sharing the platform and letting me bring some of the resources that I've used at Investopedia and other places to get a better understanding of this myself, because I'm an investor in the space, but I am by no means an expert. But I do think I have a general understanding of it. I'm excited to share it with your audience. Thank you.
That's a fact. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the stage is set. Cryptocurrency. You know, our first experience with cryptocurrency was 2017.
Yep.
And we had a group of guys that just invested in crypto. Everybody kind of invested, you know, different amounts of money. But at that time, it works in cycles. Because at that time, Bitcoin was going crazy. And I remember me personally, when I first purchased Bitcoin, it was $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking to my dad. And he just didn't understand it. He's like, why would you pay $5,000 for something that's not even real? Like $5,000 for Bitcoin? Like that doesn't even make any sense. Like you can't even comprehend.
That would only get you 20% of a Bitcoin today.
That was the time. And at the time, I still remember that. I remember when you purchased it. It was three things you could buy. It was
Litecoin,
Ethereum, and Bitcoin.
I bought them all.
Yeah, everybody was like, well, I'll just buy them all. We weren't really understanding of it. We saw that run up to 17,000. It was like, this is the game changer. I remember saying this to a lot of people. We don't want to get left on the dock when this ship leaves. right? If this is the airport, we don't want to get left at the terminal when this plane takes off, because it's going to take off. And slowly people were like, kind of hesitant. And now, I mean, the ship it's leaving the dock. So we got to make sure that we have enough information that we're on this journey called Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and as a whole.
Yeah. So, well, long story short, obviously it's come a long way since then, from $5,000 to $101,000. So let's go through this journey. If we can hit the like button,
please,
and share. But Caleb, I know you have some slides, and we're really gonna go full fledged education with this. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna go through some slides, and then we'll ask some questions, and then we'll take some questions from the audience if people are interested in the audience and have questions. Yeah, I'll let you cue it up. You know, I guess you want to start with this, you know, introduction, then from what Bitcoin, and then just take it from there.
Cool. All right. Just let me make sure I can move those. All right, cool. I can move them around. Well, again, thank you for having me. Investopedia has been around for a minute. We were founded in 1999. We're 25 years old, celebrated our 25th anniversary this year. And we've been educating investors about money, about investing, about personal finance, about all the aspects of how to live with money in your life, but especially about investing in wealth building for a very long time. We are a free site. Come one, come all. If you search something up on the internet, like any of these terms, Bitcoin, blockchain, proof of work, proof of stake, you're going to see our results near the top, because we've been doing this for a minute. So we are delighted to be here. And I'm delighted to represent as the editor in chief. I've been a business journalist for 30 years. So I am not, as I said, a crypto expert, a trading expert. What I am good at is learning these ecosystems and then sharing that information. So if you like what you hear, if you want to hear more, follow us on Investopedia, follow me if you want. I do a lot of this stuff. A lot of the front-facing social education stuff for Investopedia, and I'm on TV and on the radio, and I've been privileged to be on your stage a few times as well. So let's get after it. Everything, or most of the things I'm going to talk about today, I got from our guides on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency at Investopedia, but I also grabbed some resources from some other places. So if you're very new to this for the first time and I'm talking too fast or I'm saying things that go over your head, A, throw it in the chat and say, what does that mean? B, scan this code so you have it so you can look at our guide. It's pretty robust on all things crypto, but especially Bitcoin, which is sort of the king of the coins in the cryptocurrency patch, so to speak. So scan that, scan it now, scan it later. But this is all free and easy stuff to digest if I go through something that you don't understand. So I recommend you do that. Let's talk about Bitcoin itself. Again, the king of the coins. And guys, interrupt me as you see fit, but this is a cryptocurrency, virtual money. Some people call it digital gold, but it was created about 14 years ago to be outside the control of any one person or group. So banks and governments aren't needed to produce it, to regulate it, or oversee it. And think about when it was formed in the ashes of the great financial crisis, right? Occupy Wall Street was happening at the time. There was a lot of backlash against banks, too big to fail, a system that was broken based upon mortgages that shouldn't have been carved up and sold, right? There was this lack of trust in the financial system. So Bitcoin was born out of that, along with a lot of other technologies. But this was the big one. Again, when it was born as a digital currency, but it was really a software program and a problem solved by a mysterious figure, whether this person is an actual person, a group of people, a consortium, a man, a woman, an alien. We have no idea, but they go by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto, right? The creator of the Bitcoin currency, who basically created this idea for this digital currency through this white paper. And scan the code if you want to geek out and read it. It gets very dense, very fast, but they created it for a reason, to create this currency that lived on a blockchain, a digital ledger, away from government oversight, away from the big bad banking institutions. So if you really want to get into it, you can read about Satoshi, or you can read the white paper itself. I've only made it through a few pages, and it really knocks me out because I'm just not that smart. But people that love to geek out on computer programming really are into the white paper, and it makes a lot of sense for them. But he created this idea for Bitcoin to be this coin, this currency that traded on the blockchain. You've probably heard this name a lot, the blockchain. What is the blockchain? Well, the blockchain is like a digital ledger. If you think about, you know, if you ran a small business years ago, or you had parents that did it and they had the accounting sheet, the assets and the liabilities, and every transaction was recorded on a real ledger, on a real piece of paper. This is a digital ledger, but it's wide open to everybody. So all records are transparent and it's impossible to alter the blockchain. It is a digital record of transactions, of work, of insurance. It's used in a lot of different ways right now. And if you think about the way cryptocurrencies and the blockchain are related, think of the blockchain like the highway. Right? The highway's built out there for all of us to get around. And then the cryptocurrencies and the tokens are the vehicles on that highway. So this is the underlying structure of all of these cryptocurrencies. They're on this open blockchain where we can see everything. And you're going to hear a lot, if you haven't already, about centralized versus decentralized versus distributed networks. This is only important so you get it conceptually. But when you think about a centralized network, think about like our banking system, right? There's your bank, could be Citibank, could be Chase, could be any Bank of America, right? But all banks are part of banking networks, right? There may be individual retail banks or chains of banks, but in the middle of it all is the central bank, right? The Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States. And then there are 12 regional central banks. And then all banks have to work within their rules, right? So that's a centralized network. Right in the middle, you got the big circle in the middle, like a solar system, and all the things running around it. Our solar system is a centralized network, if you think of it that way. A decentralized network is what blockchain is, right? This is where it's open to everybody. Everybody can see what's going on. There is no one person or thing or entity in control of a decentralized network. And that is the promise of the blockchain and ultimately all the cryptocurrencies that are trading on it, that live on it, or that are programmed into the software of it. And then there's distributed networks. Think like your cell phone company, right? There are cell phone towers and there are cell phone companies everywhere, but they're distributed all over the place. So you have your Sprint tower over here and you have your AT&T tower over here. That's a distributed network. But for the purposes of understanding cryptocurrency and the blockchain, it's really a decentralized network that you have to get your mind around. Super important to understand what that is. So guys, interrupt at any time, but just so we can get through some of these basics, because we're going to refer to some of these words, where is the blockchain being used today in 2024 and really for the past 5 or 6 years? Well, one of the big reasons that Bitcoin was created and the blockchain became such a big thing, especially in the wake of the great financial crisis, was the ability to transfer money to people, either the unbanked or the people that did not trust banks anymore that wanted to transfer funds. Right now, globally, there's money being transferred from one country to another. People here are transferring back home to where their families are. Money transfer has been a huge business, but you think about the fees and the friction in a money transfer. If you're transferring $100, you know, to your aunt in Jamaica, you're probably going to pay $15 on that for a money transfer fee. And there's multiple layers of friction that it has to go through. So the blockchain is used to sort of eliminate that, and you can transfer Bitcoin without paying a fee. Smart contracts. That's where the blockchain is being used as well. Think about insurance or real estate. How many, you know, stacks of papers do we sign and fill out? And how many files are there for one real estate transaction? There are hundreds of them. If you've ever bought a house or a piece of property, you'll sign your name 50 or 60 times and the paperwork's all over the place. A smart contract is on the blockchain. Everybody can see it. They open it up like a digital file. Internet of Things, very similar. You know, your refrigerator knows when you're out of milk. It's already placing the order for you, right? This is blockchain, less friction, sort of the digital world connecting to itself. And then there's things like healthcare where we're using blockchain, logistics, non-fungible tokens you may have heard of, right? Those live on a blockchain and you trade those through digital currencies like Ethereum. Even the government uses blockchain. And in the media, we use blockchain as well for file storage, combing through files, right? It's already in use. So if you think about this infrastructure, think of it like a highway, it's already out there and it's been out there for a number of years. Again, I mentioned the fact that the blockchain is the highway, but then the coins and the tokens are the vehicles that trade on that highway and they serve different purposes. So Bitcoin is a coin, obviously, you know the name, right? But then there are the things like tokens, utility tokens or DAO tokens. Bitcoin is a digital currency similar to a physical currency, but in the case of Bitcoin, it's not backed by anything, right? It's not a store of value for something like gold. You can't base its value off of, you know, what it would trade in for gold, but it does have a numerator. It does have a number, a fee, a dollar amount associated with it that we'll talk about in a minute. But they operate on their own blockchain with their own protocols. You can use them as a source of payments. Bitcoin is the big one. And Ethereum, you've probably heard of that as well. In coins, we talk about smart coins.
and we talk about sort of dumb coins. Bitcoin's kind of a dumb coin, not that it's a dumb technology. You just can't do much with it, but collect it, trade it. Now you can purchase things with it. Ethereum is a little bit smarter. Tokens are a whole different thing. They don't necessarily operate on their own blockchain. You can use them for payments and for signing digital agreements. So think about that real estate purchase, right? You may use tokens in a digital blockchain world to complete or parts of that purchase or part of that paperwork, right? They're more useful, but they're not like a digital currency, right?
Okay, really quick, because a lot of people, when they hear cryptocurrency, they hear Bitcoin, they hear blockchain, they think that they're all the same thing. So I just want you to touch on that just really quickly, because blockchain is a technology. Obviously, Bitcoin is a coin that operates on that technology.
That's right.
But that technology exists in the real world, right? You gave some great examples already, but I think people just need to understand to differentiate the two.
Right.
Blockchain is going to exist and going to continue to exist in all the things we do. Bitcoin, a different thing, not the same in the same sense. It's just that it operates on it.
That's right. Think of that highway metaphor, right? Blockchain's the highway. Bitcoin is, you know, one of the vehicles. Maybe it's a Cadillac on that highway, an old El Dorado, because it's been around for a long time, maybe worth a lot right now. But then there are faster cars, and then there are cars that came out of nowhere, like a Dogecoin, really doesn't have anything backing it, but it's kind of the fast car that speeds along the highway. And you're like, where did that go? So they're very different. Blockchain is a very useful piece of technology. It's vast, and it's in use already across the banking system. It's very prevalent in the bond market, even in the stock trading market. Blockchain is basically this massive digital infrastructure that has been built out for the past decade and will be built out in through the next decade or two. So the building of the blockchain is a very big deal. Think of like the building of the American Railroad. Think about the building of the American Highway. This is what blockchain is doing in the world of technology. And these coins and these tokens and these dollar-based coins, they all trade on it. They all drive on it. You need the blockchain for Bitcoin to exist. If the blockchain wasn't here, we would never have had a Bitcoin. So I'm giving you a massive list here of a bunch of the cryptocurrencies, but there are literally thousands of them. This you can look at it on coingecko.com if you want. You can look at all of the digital currencies that basically exist and are trading right now. I just threw up 30 or so of them, so because maybe you've seen a few of them before, but Bitcoin rules the roost. It's the biggest of them all. And then you have others like Ethereum, and you have Tether, and they all serve different purposes. But Bitcoin's the big popular one that gets all the attention, and it's got the biggest price tag. This is just a way to look at a lot of the symbols you may have seen before. I encourage you to do your research on all of these, but we're going to talk mostly about Bitcoin today because that's getting so much of the attention. The thing about Bitcoin, when it was created by Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever that entity is, it has a limited supply. If you go back and you read that white paper, you read it on your own time, the way that Satoshi, whoever Satoshi was, set it up was that there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoins to be mined. And when I say mined, you might be thinking of like gold mining, like literally going underground and picks and shovels and digging into the earth to extract gold. It's like that, but it's actually done with software and it's done with computing power and it takes a lot of energy. You may have heard stories about how much it costs to produce just one Bitcoin in terms of energy. You could power a small city, right? A lot of that's true, but it's getting a little bit easier the energy use is not as intense as it used to be. But because there's only 21 million Bitcoin that will ever be mined, that's a limited supply. And that's one of the attractive features of Bitcoin, especially as we see it at these very high prices. We're at about 19.8 million that have already been mined. There are not that many more Bitcoin to be mined. The thing about Bitcoin, though, because you have to mine it solving a software equation or a math equation with software, it gets harder and harder for programmers to solve it. It takes a lot of computing power, it takes a lot of smarts, and it takes a lot of time. So as we get closer to 21 million and we're at about 19.8 million, it gets harder and harder to mine these things, which kind of raises the value. Tighter supply, more difficult to produce. That's helping boost the price along with a bunch of other factors, right? Again, it's a supply-demand issue. We're here right now, and well, we're here a little bit further in 2024. Not that many more Bitcoin to be mined. A lot of it's already out there. It's just more difficult to mine, and it has a scarcity issue. When you have a scarce resource that a lot of people are interested in, prices go up. I don't care if we're talking about Air Force Ones. I don't care if we're talking about, you know, a brand new special iPhone. You know, scarcity of a product that people want and are interested in always drives price. It's supply, demand, and it's mania, and it's hype. And Bitcoin has all of these aspects associated with it, right? So in terms of a asset, something you can buy and trade and invest in, well, Bitcoin has ruled the roost in the capital markets for the past 10 years, really. But in the past 5 years alone, just look at the price appreciation of Bitcoin. It just blows out all these other things. I'm going to read you, if you can't see it close enough, Bitcoin's up about 1,290% in the past 5 years, right? The S&P 500, our stock market, the 500 biggest companies in America, is up 91% in the past 5 years. Guys, that's outstanding, right? Those are great returns for stocks. But when you look at Bitcoin, it doesn't even compare. The Dow Jones Industrials, they're not all industrials, that's up 56%. Gold, and I use the ETF as the proxy, is up about 78% in the past 5 years, and the dollar is up about 10%. So Bitcoin, in terms of an investment, has returned a lot more, or generated a lot more what we call alpha in our business because of this scarcity, because of the interest in it. And a lot of that has come in different waves. Rashad mentioned he first got introduced to it in 2016, 2017. Bitcoin had already been around. I remember back in 2014 when it was $2. And no, I didn't buy it because I didn't understand it. But the more scarce it gets, the more interest there is, and the more adoption there is by both investors like us, individual investors, or institutional investors like the Fidelities of the world, the BlackRocks of the world, the Goldman Sachs of the world. And yes, they're interested. And yes, they're mining their own Bitcoin. Well, that's just going to drive price even higher. So in the past 5 years, it has blown out stocks by a long shot. But let me take you back five more years beyond that. $10,000 invested in Bitcoin 10 years ago, that's worth $2.9 million today. Now, you want to talk about fear of missing out, or, you know, I wish somebody would have told me about this and I just would have put $1,000. Well, we can think about that with everything. Bitcoin is super unique with returns like this. 10,000 10 years ago, worth $2.9 million today. We have never seen anything like it in the capital markets. And I've been doing this for a very long time. So we can talk about why that's happened. But still, even with that massive price appreciation, Bitcoin is still, it's much bigger than that. It's about $1.5 trillion now, but it's very small compared to the market capitalizations of big assets that are already traded in our capital markets. Real estate being the biggest worldwide, the $330 trillion market. Global debt, we're talking about the bond market. We're talking about US debt, Chinese debt, Japanese debt, European country debt. That's a $315 trillion market. Fiat currency, we're talking about dollars, euros, yens, right? That's a $120 trillion market. Bitcoin is $1.5 trillion market. It's come a long way in 14 years, but it is still a very small asset class, comparatively speaking. And given the hype that it gets, barely anybody owns it. But the people that own it own a lot of it, especially some of the bigger companies. So we'll get into that in a second. Just keep that in mind, though. When Rashad mentioned that 85% of people surveyed say they don't own it, well, you know, it's still pretty young and it's still pretty small. And it wasn't until the last year or two where it really became available for us to put into our retirement accounts, to buy like an exchange traded fund, like we would buy an exchange traded fund that tracks the NASDAQ, right? It is still kind of I wouldn't call it a baby, but I may call it like an 8-year-old or like a 14-year-old, because that's actually what it is.
And that's why, not to cut you off, but that's why we wanted to have this. It's like, you know, we talk about this stuff on Market Mondays all the time. And I mean, you could just go out and just buy Bitcoin, XRP, whatever you want, and that's fine. But I feel like you know, the being that 83% of people still have not invested in it, most people are still not educated in it. So you could just buy something just because, you know, you say like this is a good buy, but like I said, this is just to kind of give you education on it, because it's an asset class that most likely is only going to get bigger. It's going to be here for a long period of time. It's extremely complicated and most people don't understand it. Even if they buy it, they don't understand it. So you should never invest in anything that you don't understand. So the whole purpose of this is to give you a real form of education, so you just have more confidence in knowing what you're actually putting your money in to, as opposed to just blindly just, you know, throwing it and not even knowing what you're actually doing, right? So that's the purpose of this. It's not to debate whether XRP is better than Solana or not. It's to actually just give you some education so you can have some level of understanding that gives you more confidence, but then that also just builds a more solid foundation going forward, because like I said, you know, you saw that chart. Mm-hmm. It's still relatively early. That's the crazy part about it, right? So it's not going anywhere. So, you know, you don't have to rush to just go out of your mind and just put your life savings into something. Like, you know, just take your time, educate yourself, dollar cost average. The same rules apply as the stock market. But, you know, a lot of times people don't get that education. So that's why this whole thing is just designed to actually educate you. We're going to talk about the onboarding process and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, first you got to kind of know the history, the trajectory, the fundamentals. This is how you can, you know, learn a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, but I want to go to one of the slides that you brought up, and you the percentage increase versus the S&P versus the Dow, which is interesting because when you do the history, you said something very important. This is being mined, and most people say, well, it's being mined. It takes a lot of energy. That shouldn't sound unfamiliar to people who have been watching Market Money and the Follows for the past 5 years, because these things were being mined in what we call data centers, right? And you know the efficiency that it takes to have a data center when it comes to GPUs, but that high computing was started because of Bitcoin, right?
Right.
So when we talk about the new technology of artificial intelligence, this is very familiar in the same sense where it was like we needed data centers, we needed to have them running at a high efficiency to do quantum compute or advanced computing. This sounds very similar to the day we're in right now when we see an NVIDIA running. We saw Broadcom today running because of the same things, AI predominantly inside that data center segment. So these two things are running parallel at the same time.
Yeah, and absolutely. And you know what? Stocks are doing very well as Bitcoin goes up. Power companies, energy companies that are producing energy to power these data centers. Every time you go on a flight right now, if you're flying out of the, I don't care where you're flying in the United States, you fly over a bunch of warehouses, you see them all, or you're driving on the highway and all you see are warehouses. Well, half of those are fulfillment centers for Amazon and Walmart and everybody to get you your goods right away. The other half are data centers full of super servers, right, that are doing massive computing power either to mine crypto or to mine AI, use for AI computing purposes, to mine data, to sell us more things, right? Data is the currency of the 21st century. Bitcoin is in that ecosystem, and so is the blockchain. The blockchain is part of the railroad of that ecosystem. And to Rashad's point, right, this is about knowing what you own. Now, you could buy it on a whim. You could buy any of the coins I put up there on a whim. You could have bought Bitcoin a long time ago and just said, I don't know, I'm gonna give it a whirl. But it's always better to know what you own. So you have a better understanding whether you want to keep owning it or own more of it potentially, or when something big happens, you have a better understanding of it. It makes you a smarter investor and you can make better decisions based on that. We can't tell you which one of these is going to go up 1,000%. I wish we could. If we could, we probably wouldn't be here right now. Well, we would. We'd be teaching you from the yacht. But what's important is to know what you own and understand this whole ecosystem and the history of it. So when people start talking to you about it, you can be like, I actually have a little bit more of an informed opinion than that. All right. Can we go back to some of the companies that are using it? Because I think this gets into the use case. And then we'll talk about how to get into it if you're not into it yet or you want to teach somebody else how to get into it. Let me see if I can get back in there. All right, cool. So again, this is a 14-year-old technology. Bitcoin has been around for 14 years. The blockchain has been being built for the last couple of decades. But more and more financial institutions and processes have been preparing for this future. And the future is actually now, right? PayPal is very involved in cryptocurrency. You can pay people with cryptocurrencies through PayPal. MasterCard allows you to use some of your rewards to buy cryptocurrencies. BlackRock, the biggest money manager in the world, right? It's got $13 trillion. It is offering Bitcoin exchange-traded funds and ways to access Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies through trust. Obviously, Square, the payment platform, is in there. Fidelity Investments, one of the most stodgy sort of money financial managers in the world that's been around for the last 100-odd years. They've been mining their own Bitcoin for the past 10 years. Abigail Johnson, the woman who runs that firm, is fascinated with this technology. And if Fidelity is offering it, and BNY Mellon, which used to be the Bank of New York, the bank that Alexander Hamilton founded quite 200-plus years ago, they're into Bitcoin too. So this is not like it's maybe happening. It's happening today. The biggest financial firms in the world are using it. The biggest payment firms in the world are using it. But what can you actually buy with it today besides turning it into fiat? What can you buy with cryptocurrency? Well, you can go out on a limb in some places and buy some property that's priced in Bitcoin. The price of Bitcoin changes very frequently, so you got to watch those prices. But there are some brokers in places outside the U.S. mostly that allow you to buy in Bitcoin. Some of these retailers will allow you to use Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies like Ethereum to buy gift cards. And some of these retailers will allow you to place orders using cryptocurrency. Uber Eats will let you do it in some cases in some cities. GameStop's been accepting it for a while, right? It is out there and it's in use, but you're not going to go to Burger King or Carvel, if you will, and go pay with Bitcoin right now. It's just not that widely held. But Ethereum, which is another type of cryptocurrency, a smart coin, we call it, you could go buy non-fungible tokens like the Pudgy Penguins down there. Those are like 10 grand each. I don't know why. Those are non-fungible tokens. These are art that exists in a unique way on the blockchain. There's only one of these, and that's another aspect of the blockchain universe. So you can't buy a pizza necessarily, except maybe one or two pizza parlors, and at the Dallas Mavericks Stadium, they'll allow you to use Dogecoin to buy a pizza. But in general, there are very few places that accept it as a means of exchange right now, but they are growing. But if you wanted to get into it and you wanted to own some cryptocurrency, the first thing you have to do to trade it, to buy it, to sell it, to give it to somebody, to accept it as a gift, is to have a wallet, right? You need a digital place for this cryptocurrency to go. Nobody's going to hand you a stack of Bitcoin. There is no Bitcoin, right? It's just digital technology. It's a software problem. So you need either a cold wallet, which really looks just like a hard, you know, what do you call those? Thumb drive. Yeah, some of them look even fancier. That's called a cold wallet. Or you can buy, or you can have a wallet on an exchange, kind of like you do with your Cash App or your bank app, right? That's called a hot wallet that lives on the internet. And if you open an account with a Coinbase or a crypto.com or a Kraken or any of them, you're going to be opening what's called a hot wallet. A little less secure because it's on the internet and all kinds of things happen on the internet with hacking. But a cold wallet is sort of an offsite storage, right? You have your own passcode for that. You have that one thumb drive that has all your cryptocurrency in it. You better not lose it. And we've heard stories about people losing their thumb drive or forgetting the password and losing millions or billions of dollars worth of it. That happens. That's real. Mm-hmm. But it's your choice. Questions on this, guys?
Yeah, the onboarding for Americans, you got to go through like Coinbase and you can take it off of it. But that's important because when you buy the crypto, like let's say you use Coinbase, for example, because I think that's probably like the most recognizable exchange. You do have the option to just leave it on Coinbase. In that regard, Coinbase is kind of like the custodian of your actual Bitcoin, right? Which leads to problems. Could lead to problems. You could... you have the option of buying it and then taking it off, right? And then using the wallets, right? Now, this is important because, like you said, if anything happens to that, right? Let's say you're using a cold wallet and you lose it. There's when you buy stock, there's federal regulations and there's oversight and these companies, you don't just say like, yeah, I'm done, right? That doesn't exist in the world of crypto. So if you have $5 million on your cold wallet and you go to Turks and Caicos and you bring it with you, or you don't bring it with you, and your cleaner comes in and thinks that it's a USB drive and throws it away, there's no recourse to get the $5 million back. Okay. There's no 1-800. There's no 1-800 number that you
1-800 Bitcoin. Where's my Bitcoin?
No.
And that's a big deal, right? When we say unregulated, we mean there's no sheriff in town here, right?
Right.
And we've heard of these big crypto platforms like Binance, where they've had fraud or where there was bad dealings and millions were lost. Some of that can get recovered because you can trace the digital sort of footprint of some of these things, but there is no Securities and Exchange Commission right now, and there might be in a couple months, that is overseeing crypto. There is no SIPC like there is in stocks, where that your investments are being protected up to a certain amount. There's no FDIC like there is at your bank that protects up to $250,000 of your money in the bank should something happen to the bank, right? There is no
phrase. I think the phrase is like 24 letters, something like that.
I was you want to touch on that?
Yeah,
well, special phrase. Yeah, I'll show you what one looks like. It's crazy.
Yeah, so this is important, and it's a word of the wise, especially if you're going to use a cold wallet. That seed phrase can be 20 to 24 words. Make sure that you store that. Make sure that you never lose that, because you won't be able to get inside that cold wallet. But here's something that people need to know if you're going to purchase a cold wallet. Number one, please purchase it from the direct company, right? So a lot of times you'll go on Amazon or you might go on Walmart and you'll say, hey, there's a cold wallet and I need it next day shipping. The problem is you don't know where that cold wallet came from. And sometimes somebody has used it, they've already created the seed phrase, and you get it, you upload all your assets, and in a day, you can't get back in because it's been hotwired already. Has that happened before? Yes, that happens to people. And so to alleviate that, what you want to do is get it. I see a bunch of people putting, get it directly from Ledger, get it directly from Trezor. There's a reason why they're saying that, because that is a cautionary tale that can happen to people. It's a new space, right? It's unregulated in this sense. And so you want to make sure you take every precaution and every step as possible. That seed phrase, again, I would store it. I would put it in a safe just so that you know that it's there. And if anything ever happens, you know where to get it from. Because again, beyond losing it, if you lose that phrase, you can't get back in.
Once it's gone, it's gone, right? And again, there is no sheriff in town, at least not yet. And that's kind of the point of cryptocurrency. It is supposed to be unregulated. Bitcoin was designed to be unregulated, but we can all see transactions. We can see when it happened, where it happened. If somebody steals Bitcoin, you always hear about people, you know, stealing X amount of million in Bitcoin. You can really trace them down because they leave a digital footprint. But if you lose your passcode or you lose your cold wallet, it is gone.
Or if you send it to the wrong address. Ooh. So that's or if you send it. Somebody said, like, how do you, so let's say if you buy it on Coinbase, you have an address and then you send it to another address. So if you send it to another, if you send it to the wrong address, if you miss a letter,
number,
you're done. And that's happened to me before. Mm-hmm. So everything that I'm speaking on, it happened, the firsthand experience. So the Chase thing, when I went to Chase 2 years ago and Coinbase, and they were saying that so many people were coming into Chase Bank trying to retrieve money because their Coinbase account got hacked. And that wasn't on national news or anything like that. But this is the banker telling me firsthand, like, how rampant Coinbase hacks was. How many customers was actually coming in saying that their Coinbase got hacked, and as a result, their bank account was compromised. And that happens. Like, that is not a fairy tale. Like, it really happens. Yeah. So the security aspect is something that's definitely real. I mean, you can choose to do whatever you want. You can leave it on Coinbase. You can leave it on, you can buy Robinhood. You can transfer it to your own personal wallet. But no matter what you do, there is some level of security that you should just be aware of.
Yeah, those
and it's on you. It's on you, the owner, right? This is, again, you went to Chase because maybe their Chase account was linked to their Coinbase account. But I'm sure Chase was like, we can't help you, right? Coinbase is not ours. But if you are setting up a wallet, and I use Coinbase here for the first time, if you're opening an account and setting up a hot wallet on a Coinbase, it's as simple as signing up for basically any app you've ever signed up for, or if you're signing up for the gym, or if you're signing up for a, you know, online banking, the app for your bank, Citi, Chase, whatever it is, it looks just like it, right? You pick your username, you pick your password, you back up your wallet, as Rashad just mentioned, you protect your wallet with a double factor authentication, mm-hmm. a Face ID, that could be an extra text. This is all about setting up a secure hot wallet so it's as protected as possible, and that's what you need to do as soon as you want to get involved and start your investing journey, right? And then when you start using these apps, and I went from Coinbase there to crypto.com just to give you a different flavor, because guess what? They're all kind of the same. Once you start wanting to make transactions on these platforms, again, they look just like sports betting sites. They look just like regular online trading sites or banking, online banking sites. You are basically looking at a watch list of the things you might own, and then you're deciding whether to buy, sell, deposit money into your account, which would come from your bank account, your fiat. Fiat is dollars. Fiat, you fund your crypto account with real dollars. That's where that, you know, these two things come clash, right? And then you just transact. You make transactions. You can buy, you can sell, you can buy with limit orders, and I'll show you what it looks like. I actually did it today for you guys. You got me so inspired. I went out and bought some Bitcoin, and I set a limit order for some Bitcoin. If it ever falls to 75, I'm going to buy some more. So let me show you how I did that. First screen here, this is my Coinbase account. I wanted to buy $100 of Bitcoin. I looked at it on my watch list. Then it asked me what kind of order, just like I would if I was buying a stock on Schwab.com. Is this a one-time order, or do I want to buy every month on a recurring basis? Dollar cost averaging, as Rashad mentioned. Or is this a limit order? I only want to buy Bitcoin if it hits a certain price. The screen on the right is that $75 price. I'd like to buy some Bitcoin if it goes down to 75 because I think it's going to go back up again if it does. Or again, a recurring buy. Am I dollar cost averaging in? Then I set my order. I'm paying with my checking account. There's my Schwab checking account. Hopefully the number's not there anymore. They'll only let me buy $5,000 worth in a day. They set a limit for me. Thank you very much. And then I review my order if I'm happy with it. And look, I don't have to buy. Bitcoin is trading near $100,000 per Bitcoin. Just like stocks, you can buy fractional or dollar amounts of any cryptocurrency. You don't have to buy the full price tag of it. So if I'm buying $100 worth of Bitcoin today, I'm buying 0.00009543 Bitcoin, right? A fraction of a fraction of a fraction. The smallest, most possible, teeniest denomination of Bitcoin is called a Toshi, a Satoshi, like a penny. So cute. But I'm with $100, I'm buying just a very fractional amount. But that's the whole thing. I don't have to afford $100,000 to buy Bitcoin today. I just want to buy a little bit every month because I want to keep owning it. And that's kind of the way I operate as an investor. I pick five or six coins and tokens that I understand, where I think I know what's going on. And by the way, I don't really understand the way the business works because there is no business behind these coins. It's mostly belief, but I understand what their purpose is and could be. I buy the same five and I buy the same five and the same amount every month. If a price drops a lot, maybe I'll buy a little bit more, but I set up recurring buys for myself. And sometimes I set limit orders if I want to buy it at a cheaper price. But it looks just like any online broker you've used before, just like your bank account, right? But there are a ton of risk factors in investing in crypto. Rashad just mentioned, Troy mentioned a couple of them. One of those is losing your password or having your account hacked. And that happens all the time. But also, these are super volatile assets. When I say volatile, we're talking about extreme beta, right? Prices gyrate on these things for no rhyme or reason. It's not like you can look inside these coins and say, oh, they had a bad quarter. These coins don't sell anything. Or the CEO left. Some of these coins have no CEO. Most of them don't, right? Or the economic winds are shifting and all of a sudden this is not working anymore. It's not fundamental like that. It's really based on belief. And that's a big thing you have to accept if you're going to own cryptocurrencies, whether it's tokens or coins. You have to understand that a lot of this is based on belief, and we can talk about that more in a minute. We talked about hacking, right? And we also, you know, although some financial institutions are allowing you to invest in it and even transact in some cases, it's not accepted by the federal banking institutions, by the Federal Reserve, at least not yet. And I put the word yet there because we have a new presidential administration coming in, and President-elect Trump has promised to make America the crypto capital of the world. He said the United States will mine its own cryptocurrency. It will never sell or hold on for dear life forever to the cryptocurrencies that are already in our treasury that the United States Treasury got from, you know, arresting people that hacked into other people's accounts, right? It may happen that it becomes regulated, which would be antithetical, but another huge risk, and I bolded it for a reason, is that there is an intense amount of ownership concentration, especially in Bitcoin. A very few institutions, groups, and individuals own most of it. And should they decide to sell at any point, well, that could really drop the price a lot. And that's a very big and important factor, not just in cryptocurrency, in any security, but you want to make sure you understand this well. It's got these things going for it. It's got a really tight supply of Bitcoin, right? I told you, only 21 million will ever be created. It's got a lot of demand and a lot of hype. it costs more and more to produce. It gets more expensive and timely to produce. It's got competitors now, but it is, you know, the king of the hill. Up until now, the SEC has not really been that friendly to it. The Securities and Exchange Commission, the top cop on Wall Street, but we got a new Securities and Exchange Commissioner coming in with the Trump administration. He sounds more friendly, but Bitcoin gets a ton of media coverage, a ton of media coverage for as small as it is. And all these things affect its price. Okay, I talked about the fact that it's heavily concentrated and that, you know, just a few entities own most of it. And when you have this heavily of a concentration in an asset, anything can happen. The price spikes a lot. Why? Oh, because one or more of these entities decided they wanted to buy more of it. Oh, the price dropped. What happened? Well, some of these entities decided that they didn't want as much of it anymore. They can really impact supply, demand, and ultimately price. And as an individual investor or somebody who's trying to trade these or hold these or buy them for my kids for the long term, I have zero control over that and not a ton of visibility. But when you look at who holds the most Bitcoin, Coinbase, that's us, individual investors that are buying into our own accounts. Satoshi, whoever that is, it's an entity, a mysterious entity, but they do have a digital signature, so we know it's out there. We just can't track the person down. Binance, BlackRock, the biggest money manager in the world. This company here, MicroStrategy, this is a publicly traded stock that used to be in the, making equipment for servers, right? It used to be in the AI intelligence business, but it's changed its business completely. And for the past 5 years, its CEO, Michael Saylor, all he wants to do is collect Bitcoin. And basically, it's a Bitcoin treasury and one of the best performing stocks this year.
Okay? Here's the interesting thing about this chart, Caleb. I know it says as of November 24, election happened. We saw Bitcoin run. BlackRock has actually increased their ownership. They now have over 528,000 Bitcoin. So you're talking about the largest treasury of money from an institutional. They're seeing a value in it, whereas before, maybe 5 years ago, this chart would look nothing like this.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
That's important. Like I said, it's not, we're agnostic about the situation. So just giving you the information, it's not this, not debatable facts. Just so you can be informed. Bitcoin is held by institutions for the most part. That's not something that is debatable. That's an actual fact. Now, it could be a good thing because you could say, okay, well, if BlackRock owns this much and they're not going to, they're very intelligent people, right? They're not going to own something that's not going to go up in value. That's a sign that it's going to go up in value. That's a sign that, you know, it's going to be even safer going forward. Or you can look at it and say, well, if they own this much, then they're going to control everything. And it kind of goes against the whole principles of it being decentralized and da da da, and the small guys ever win. But this is the world does not work on fairy tales. The rich run it. The rich have always run the world, right? There's never been a time in human history since money was created that the rich didn't run the world. And they run cryptocurrency. They own the most of it. They control the price and they run it. That's just important for you to know. So it's not like this utopia that some people think that it is. Mm-hmm. That's just not the case.
Yeah.
And I have a strong suspicion that they could still get you, because even, you know, in the Middle East, when October 7th happened, they got the Hamas's crypto, so Bitcoin. So I don't know how they got. I don't know how they did that, but that lets me know that if they want to get your crypto, they're going to get your crypto. That's just my own personal opinion. That might not be an actual fact, but the fact that they actually got their Bitcoin so quickly, I just think that they have some level of intelligence that if
digital footprints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all on the ledger.
It's all on the ledger. Now, they can do some digital sleuthing to find out who's who on that ledger, and that's probably how they got it. But let me just show, go back to that chart real quick if we can, or is I presenting?
I got you.
Okay, so you see there the U.S. government, number 7. It owns 213,000 Bitcoin at a value. Well, now the value is probably $25 billion, but where did it get its Bitcoin, right? Well, it's not like the Treasury and Janet Yellen was out there scooping Bitcoin, right? And it definitely wasn't happening in the administration before that. What is it from? It's from the seizure of assets from criminal activity that the Treasury keeps in its Treasury, right? So the United States owns Bitcoin, and President-elect Trump said they'll never sell it. Now, catering to the Bitcoin crowd and help get them elected. But we do have quite a bit of Bitcoin in our treasury. And if we're going to mine our own, there's going to be a lot more. And to your point, Rashad, it's antithetical to the way that Bitcoin was created by Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever that was, right? It was never supposed to be this, but it's gone capitalist real quick. Why? Mm-hmm. Because there's value in it. And once there's value in something, here come the sharks, right? And if you want to swim with the sharks as a pilot fish or a fish behind the pilot fish and make some of that money too and invest in it and learn about it, you can do that. Or you can just say, that's just capitalism run amok. I don't want any part of it. But I assume if you're watching this, you're interested in it. Yeah. Let's move on to the next slide real quick. Anyway, there's more.
Terms, we're going to call them the whales.
Yeah, they're whales. They are the whales, right? Chinese government has a ton of Bitcoin, Fidelity. Look, these are big companies, right? Robinhood has a lot, but that is held for clients like us, right? So we do have, individuals do have it. Now, in terms of where it's legal, and I borrowed this great chart from howmuch.net. They do some great work. This is a pretty accurate. It might need to be updated a little bit, but you know, it's pretty legal to own it and to transact in it and to invest in it around the world. And a lot of countries are way out in front of the United States on this. Mongolia is big on it. El Salvador tried to make it its fiat currency. That didn't work out very well because when they started it, I think Bitcoin was at 40,000, then it went to like 18,000. So that didn't work. But you see, the green shoots are places where it's legal to transact in it. China wants no part of it. Russia wants no part of it, although the Chinese government owns a lot of it, that it has seized its own way as well. So that's where it's legal around the world. Now, if you're thinking about opening an account, right, and you don't know where to do it or how to do it, and you don't want to buy the thumb drive and set it up that way because it seems scary and complicated and you don't want anybody to steal it, or you don't want your housekeeper to throw it away, and you're thinking about an exchange, there are plenty of exchanges that would love to do business with you. We have I want you to scan the code if you're interested in looking at this. We do a very critical review of all of the major crypto exchanges, to see which ones are best for who. And if you want to look at our reviews, they're written by our own editors who are crypto traders and investors themselves. And we have the best for various types of investors or traders. If you're a hardcore trader, you might want something with a little more horsepower. Kraken is that one for sure. But if you just want to open an account and start collecting it, start investing it, start learning about it, all of these are fine. Crypto.com is good, right? Coinbase is good, right? If you're looking at even Cash App will allow you to have a Bitcoin account there. Robinhood allows you to have Bitcoin accounts. And you can access Bitcoin if you have an existing account with Fidelity or Schwab through exchange traded funds that we'll talk about in a quick second here. So we talked about volatility before. This chart's old. I need to update it or have my team update it. But you got to have a pretty strong stomach to invest in Bitcoin. And people will tell you that they know why Bitcoin fell from, you know, whatever that was, 1,200 down to 900 in 2015, but they really don't know. Somebody didn't want it anymore, right? It's the greater fool theory. It's whatever the next person thinks it's worth. And if enough people think it's worth a lot, then it's going to keep going up. Then why did it spike to 2017 to 20,000? Well, that was after the Trump tax cuts. So it became a little bit easier on the capital gains front to own risky assets. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe not, because it was going up from 2014 when interest rates were really low. So again, it doesn't have the fundamentals of a stock. It has technicals. You can look at patterns and how it trades, but you can't really open up the hood and say, what's wrong with the marketing department? They're not doing a good enough job advertising the product, or what's up with the gross profit margins? It's not that type of thing. Just know, make sure that you know you got to have a strong stomach and know that Bitcoin and all the cryptocurrencies are super volatile. Oh, I didn't get to update this one, but why has it been rallying since the election? Well, as I said, Trump promised that we would be mining our own Bitcoin and he would make America the Bitcoin capital of the world. But I wanted to talk about exchange traded funds, right? Some of the biggest money managers in the world in 2024, in the beginning of this year, started offering what we call exchange traded funds, ETFs. You can buy them for stocks, you can buy them for bonds, you can buy them for commodities. But the fact that we can buy what we call spot Bitcoin ETFs, these are spot Bitcoin ETFs, right now, and put it right next to my mutual fund or right next to my QQQ ETF in my 401k is a very big deal. Now, if you own these ETFs, these exchange traded funds, which are baskets of securities, you don't actually own Bitcoin. You own an exchange traded fund that tracks the price of Bitcoin. And here's a list of the biggest ones by assets under management. When we talk about exchange traded funds, you don't just go pick one off the shelf. You want to look at the ones that have the most assets under management, the most liquidity, the most money running through them, a track record. They didn't just get here. They're part of a reputable firm that has had good success launching these ETFs, and a management team that you don't think is going to disappear into the Cayman Islands when things get weird, right? So I put a list here, but you could look at the top Bitcoin ETFs. Again, you won't own the cryptocurrency itself. You will own an exchange traded fund that tracks the price of that cryptocurrency, and that's super important. If you don't want to own an exchange traded fund, if you don't want to own the cryptocurrency itself, and you want to own stocks that are sort of tracking this whole ecosystem, well, here's a list of them. I mentioned MicroStrategy, the biggest Bitcoin owner out there. It's basically a treasury for Bitcoin. That stock is up 200% in the last 3 months. Canaan.io makes a lot of the technology for mining cryptocurrency, high-powered fans and computer equipment. That stock's up 196% in the past few months. Coinbase itself is a publicly traded company, and it's a broker. That stock's doing great, up 91% in the past few months. Riot Platforms makes equipment for blockchain, for the development of blockchain. And then Bitcoin, you can look at Bitcoin's price itself, up 76% in the last 3 months, up 50% since the election, because we have a much more friendly administration coming in and a new SEC chairman who actually likes Bitcoin. So that's one way to do it. Now, when it comes to taxes, think of crypto in your account like a stock, right? If you make a profit on that stock and sell it, and you have held it for less than a year, it is short-term capital gains, and you will be taxed at whatever your short-term capital gains rate is based on your marginal income. If you've held it more than a year, it's taxed at a long-term capital gains. But if you haven't done your taxes this year, or if you've been doing your own taxes for the past few years, the first thing they ask you after your name, after your filing status, is if you own digital assets. Now, this tells you that this asset has come a very long way. If the IRS is asking you that out of the gate, right? That's the first question, the real question they ask you. Did you receive as a reward or payment or property for services, buy, sell, exchange, or otherwise dispose of a digital asset for a financial interest? See instructions, yes or no. If you put yes, then you're saying I made a profit on the sale of my Bitcoin. You're going to have to file that as a capital gains. It is a taxable asset, even though it is unregulated. The IRS is regulating it. They have their eye on you. One more thing about keeping your crypto safe and secure. If you're opening a cold wallet, Troy mentioned that phrase, right? Keep your seed phrase confidential. These are multi-digit phrases, right? Write it down, put it in a safe. Maybe send a copy to your mom, but don't distribute it widely. Store it away from your device. You don't want the thumb drive and the piece of paper with your password next to each other, ever. Use two-factor authentication if you're using a hot wallet. That means what it means. Like, get a text message once you try to log into your account to prove that it's you. Strengthen your passwords. Change them often, right? If you're opening a hot wallet, you can do what Troy said. Download it from an exchange website onto a drive, right? Keep all the security on your devices up to date and back up that wallet, because it's on you to make sure your crypto is safe. Now, I'll take questions if you want. We could talk about it some more, but how do I get smart about this? Well, I read a ton, right? But I follow some really smart people. DACFP is the Digital Assets Council for Financial Professionals. Now, this is really for financial advisors and planners, but the way that Rick Edelman, who teaches these classes and who developed the Digital Assets Council, the way he approaches it helps people like me and you understand it. Like, everything here was not above my head. I didn't need to be a financial advisor or planner to understand this stuff. He has a very clean way of explaining it. I really like the Digital Assets Council. Lex Sokolin is one of the most intelligent futurists that I know. He hosted our crypto investing class on the Investopedia Academy when we had that. I trust him a lot. He's a super smart person who sees around the corner. Coinbase has a great educational and learning part of their website. If you want to learn anything about all these cryptocurrencies, we have one too. Coinbase is more robust. And if you already have an account there, it's a good place to learn. The Black Billionaires Club, that's our boy Lamar Wilson. He's way smart, software technician, very high level thinker. But the Black Bitcoin Billionaires Club, I learned a lot from him. And he was at InvestFest years ago. And then the Whiteboard Crypto YouTube series, I think, is pretty basic and pretty interesting. If you want to learn these basics and really geek out on them and watch them for a while, they do a nice job of explaining things. Again, I'm Caleb Silver. We're Investopedia. All this is available to you for free. I want to make sure that folks got that barcode at the beginning. if they want to follow our educational stuff, scan that QR code, I should say, not barcode. And that's the intro to Bitcoin on Investopedia.
There you have it.
It's a lot, Caleb. A lot. Well done. Well done.
Appreciate it. Let's take a few questions if people have questions before we wrap. But, man, just a lot of great insight. Thank you from bringing it to the beginning stages all the way to, you know, stocks that people can invest in. And there's different types of ways that you can invest, right? So you can invest directly with Bitcoin and hold it, your own wallet. You can invest in, have the custodian hold it for you, like the Coinbase. You can invest something that mirrors it, ETFs. If you want, you know, a higher level of security, you're not going to actually own the asset, but it'll track in the same direction as far as making money. Or you can have even more leverage with the stocks, and even more leverage if you want to do options on the stocks.
Oh yeah.
That leverages it even higher as far as the volatility on it. So it's a lot of different ways to go about it. Security, something that's very, 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 very important for sure. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I got something for you, and while we cipher through some of these questions, when you made the purchase today for Bitcoin, there's something that's in there that people need to know, because they might say, hey, I got $100, here's $100. Why didn't my Bitcoin convert over to whatever percentage it is of Satoshi? Talk about gas fees and transaction fees, because that's something that people, that's like a hidden fee that they're not going to realize, like, where did that happen? I thought I had this amount, but when I actually got my Bitcoin, it wasn't the same dollar value.
Right. Bitcoin needs to be mined, right? So at some point in time, that Bitcoin that I bought off the exchange at Coinbase was mined, right? It took labor, and I'm not talking about, you know, picks and shovels in the underground. I'm talking about computing power to mine it. So when you're buying cryptocurrencies or you're trading them, they're what we call gas fees. It used to be transaction fees. When we traded stocks, the brokers eventually did away with those because Robinhood basically killed that business, right? And they just made trading free. And now we are the product of Robinhood instead of the actual transactions. But that doesn't exist yet in crypto because, right, we're not just trading shares of pieces of paper. We're trading software that had to be mined and created at one point. They call them gas fees. You see it a lot in Ethereum, which is a smart token you use to buy things like non-fungible tokens. Heavy gas fees when you're buying and selling Ethereum or using it as a transactional method. You'll end up leaking a little bit out, a little bit of VIG, as we like to call it on the street. But that's what it is, essentially. It doesn't exist anymore in the stock market, but it does exist in the cryptocurrency market.
And another thing I noticed, that crypto is 24 hours a day too. So that's something that's different from the stock market. You can buy it at all times of the day. And especially like years ago, a lot of it was getting moved by Asia. So there was a lot of volatility that would happen in like 3 o'clock in the morning, stuff like that. So that's important just to keep in mind as far as if you are interested in buying crypto. Somebody super chat had asked the question that their friend had like $50,000 to invest in. Is Bitcoin the safest? This is my personal opinion. Yeah, I think that Bitcoin is definitely the safest relative, is a word that, you know, has different definitions depending on how you look at it. But I said this before, when you look at Bitcoin's chart, it's going up, it's going down, but it's going up. And most of these altcoin charts have not followed that same comparison. So the opportunity to just, you know, 3,000x your money in one day is definitely there, probably on a no name altcoin. But there's also probability that coin can go to zero. A lot of coins, I've seen coins go to zero. Master notes and all of these stuff, like, you know, that was a big mistake. All of these coins that I invested in, I would have just been better off if I put more of my money in Bitcoin. Majority of those coins either A, never made it back to their all-time peak that happened in 2017, or they disappeared. They went to zero. Like, that happens. That does happen. The coins go to zero. So dollar cost averaging is always the best way too, because it's definitely a volatile situation.
You can't pick the top, because you would have said 100,000 was the top a couple of days ago. We went down to 96. We could be at 102 tomorrow, and there won't be any rhyme or reason. But something that Ian says a lot on Market Mondays, and he's not wrong. Like, we over diversify sometimes. We just try to buy it all because we don't know. Like, I'm putting on chips on all the roulette pegs. Buy five of the biggest coins if you're just getting into the market and you want to learn about it. But Bitcoin rules the roost, right? If you just bought Nvidia, you would have been great in the past few years. Now, who knew that? P.S. Nvidia was making GPUs for mining cryptocurrency mm-hmm. after it made a ton of money making GPUs for video games. It went on to crypto, and now it's doing it for AI. Why is NVIDIA doing so well? It's been in the right place at the right time. But pick five healthy coins that have a history, a track record, and a software that you can basically understand. And dollar cost average your way in. And don't risk more than 5% of your portfolio. Heck, don't even risk more than 3% of your portfolio if you're scared. Make sure you don't have a loss that is unrecoverable. And I would tell you that about stocks. I would tell you that about gold. I would tell you that about everything. Don't have an unrecoverable loss. But Bitcoin, because it's new and because it's speculative and because it has all of these issues where it's not regulated, but it might be, you never know what's going to happen. So don't make a risk that's so big that it wipes you out completely.
Yeah, that's important to know. And then each exchange is not the same, right? So some exchanges don't offer all coins, right? So like when people see Bitcoin and they see Ethereum, they might see Solana or UDC. Every coin is not on every brokerage or every platform. So that's good to know. The other part is, and this is why it's important to have education, is like, yes, you can trade your US fiat to buy Bitcoin, right? But some of these other coins, you have to convert to Bitcoin to actually purchase. So you might have to get Ether, which means you'd have to buy Ethereum. This is when it gets tricky when you're trying to figure out where it's going, how to send it. I always recommend copy and paste, copy and paste. If it is available, copy and paste. Can you talk about that process? Because I don't think people understand, oh, they want to buy Solana, but they don't know how.
Well, that's why Coinbase. That's why Coinbase is good, right? Most of those Robinhood, Coinbase, all those type of, they have, Coinbase has a lot of coins.
Yeah.
So you would have to go all the way down. A coin that's not on Coinbase, you probably, that's,
you don't want to own that.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. No, and that's true, right? So it's, you know, they may all live in the same supermarket, but you can't trade one for the other without converting one to the other in some cases, right? So you want to buy, you know, something that is more proof of stake, you might need to use, you know, an Ethereum for that. If you wanted to buy something that is more tied to the dollar, you're using fiat currency for a Tether. So it gets very complicated. That's why you have to understand the rules of how these are traded and how they are and how you can operate within them. So when Rashad says, you just buy Bitcoin, it's the simplest one to understand. It has the longest price history in it. You can see kind of who owns what. It's the easiest one to wrap your mind around, but I'd pick a few of those. But if you are converting between coins, then there are transaction fees every time you do that. Sometimes you have to open a special part of your account or open it up at a higher subscriber level or pay a new fee because you're accessing a new asset class. It is not like having a Schwab account where you're just like, oh, I'll take some mutual funds and maybe some index funds. Let me buy a few stocks over here and some ETFs, and I'll buy a couple of bonds for my portfolio as well, all in the same supermarket. You're in the same supermarket, but you got to use different currencies to transact sometimes, and it becomes very complicated. So you have to have a very smart way of keeping track of what you do, which really goes for all of investing, but especially here, because it's all digital, right? And a method to what you're doing. Otherwise, you can burn a lot of money in trading fees and in gas fees.
And yeah, I think that Eric Trump was just, I think, in Abu Dhabi, and he was speaking about cryptocurrency, and it would probably, the way that they're talking about this stuff, you know, one thing about Trump is that billionaires hang around billionaires. That's one thing I learned. And we talked about TikTok, like when TikTok was going to be in ban, I was just saying, like, you know, Trump has too many rich friends. I don't see it happening. Then today, lo and behold, they were saying one of his billionaire friends wants to buy TikTok, and they're waiting for him to get in office so that they could purchase the company. So, you know, it's so much money, so much opportunity to be made in crypto. And if you listen to anything that they're saying, whether it's anybody in that in the inner circle, they're going to do everything that they possibly can to pump cryptocurrency for the next 4 years.
Yeah. And why is that? Because billionaires like billionaires. Because
billionaires like billionaires hang around billionaires.
And doing favors to people that are going to help you get reelected or to get the next person in your party elected, that's the way the political machine works, right? You spend the first 2 years trying to maybe make good on your promises, but then you got to spend the next 2 years getting reelected. That means paying back favors. Who's on the cover of Time as the most influential person or the person of the year today?
President-elect.
Who owns Time?
A billionaire. Yeah, Benioff, CEO of Salesforce.
Yeah.
Another billionaire.
Right? It's all connected.
It's all connected. That is a fact. And you saw, did you see that Meta for the first time in Facebook's history?
$1 million
will donate $1 million to the inauguration of Donald Trump. They've never donated money to an inauguration ever? Of a president ever.
Jeff Bezos, $1 million, right? He bought the Washington Post so he could keep him out of office. I guess things change.
And for the first time in Washington Post history, they didn't endorse. They didn't endorse it. They didn't endorse the candidate.
Right. So.
And now he's the second wealthiest person in the world.
To re-quote The Wire, you want it to be one way, but it's the other way. It's all connected, but sometimes it's the other way.
Caleb, your cultural relevance never seems to amaze me.
I know. I'm old.
That's a fact. A lot of things. That's a fact. So, yeah, I mean, following the money. If you follow, I say that to say, if you're following the money, it looks like the wind is at the back of crypto right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw some people asking, so which exchange? And we experienced this, right? It was like we were trying to figure out an exchange. Do we keep everything on one exchange, right? We talk about this formula, especially when we're investing in the market where we have maybe Fidelity just for our stocks and we have E-Trade strictly for our options. And we might have, you know, we separated by platforms. What's your thoughts on having a Coinbase and maybe having a Kraken? And, you know, at one point I had Binance and I had Gate.io and all these things. Gemini, I had Gemini as well. And it just becomes a lot to track and try to keep a account for. What's your thoughts around that?
Sounds like your sneaker collection, Troy.
You know me well.
I'm all for simplicity and for not overcomplicating something that is already very complicated. We gave you a list of exchanges. If you really want to get out on the edge, Kraken is the place to go where you can do very, very exotic type trading and access a bunch of different platforms. If you just want to start dollar cost averaging and building a portfolio of crypto assets, then any of these brokers are fine. Even BlackRock will help you do that. Even Schwab will help you, I think, custodian some ETF, some crypto ETFs. But Fidelity is allowing you to do it today. Coinbase is definitely, that's what they do. Robinhood allows you to do it today. You really can't go wrong unless you really want to get very complicated with it. And even like a tasty trade will allow you to do some options play, interactive brokers if you want to do it on the international front. They all allow it to a certain degree. But for basic investors that are building positions and trying to just make sure they understand it, I would keep it all in one place for now. And if you decide that you need to get a little bit more advanced and the platform you have doesn't allow you access to the coins you want or the tokens or the types of trades you want, then it's okay to either take on a new one for those types of trades. But simplicity is best in a complicated asset.
There you have it. That is a fact. And you can keep it on a ledger, but just be careful. That's it. Keep on. If you had $10 million, right? I'm speaking to the audience. Put it in chat. If you had $10 million in cash, would you rather have it in a vault in your basement or would you rather have it in Chase Bank? Neither one is a wrong answer. But
if you're Giannis, you have it in 50 banks.
at least
that's that $250,000 of it is protected by each bank. But look at all these NBA players and NFL players who are getting their house robbed when they leave town for a game. Schedule's out there for everybody to see.
They know the road game.
So a lot of people saying vote. So if you say vote, then you should have it in a ledger. You should have your own ledger. If you're saying Chase Bank, then you should have it with.
Yeah. That was one of the
crypto.com or Coinbase.
One of the things Chris was saying on Monday night, which is interesting. He wants to be in control of everything. He doesn't want to have anybody in control of it but themselves. And so that's one of those things.
Until the house burns down, blow up your house.
Right. They blow up your house or somebody robs your house and now all the money's gone. But if you're going to have that level of control, you have to equally have that level of security.
Yeah. You're the CFO, you're the CTO, you're the CEO, and you're the chief security officer.
That is a fact. And this is vitally important, too. have some, when I was a financial advisor, there was a thing called a beneficiary handbook. Because if I have life insurance and I brought $1 million life insurance policy, right? Let's say, and I secure my life insurance policy in a safe, and I have my will, I have my trust, I have all my documents, I have my retirement plan, I have it in the safe. And I'm just a very paranoid person. I have everything in the safe, da 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 da. And you know, nobody's planning on dying, but let's just say I just die one day, right? Well, if I never told anybody I have this stuff, it doesn't matter.
Good point. That is such a good point.
You can't rely on life insurance companies calling you. They're not. I worked in the industry. It's not going to happen. Millions of dollars of life insurance never gets paid out because they were never notified that the person dies. Mm-hmm. What ends up happening is that you're no longer alive, so you stop paying your premium, your policy lapses, and the company keeps the money. I say that to say, if you are keeping it in a ledger and you do have a complicated security code, well, you got to tell somebody to get the code, or you got to tell somebody to access to the code, because if you die and nobody knows anything, then you're screwed.
God's with you.
I saw a stat that, you know, tens of millions of dollars in crypto is just gone, disappeared. Either your people lost it, died without telling anybody the code, right? That is very important. I'm glad you mentioned that, Rashad, because if you're working with a financial advisor or planner or a lawyer who helps you with your wills and your trust, your revocable trust, you have to make sure that you are very explicit about the transfership of that custodianship of your crypto assets. Otherwise, it will disappear, right? It has to be very explicitly laid out in your trust or your will.
Yeah.
Again, we're still building the rules around this. This is a 14-year-old asset. So like the highways, there was no rules when we first started driving. There was a lot of accidents until they started making rules and regulations around custodianship. We need them, especially in this really exotic asset class. But I'm so glad you mentioned that. I forgot.
That also helps the supply and demand situation, because unlike the fiat money, if you have money in a bank and then you just disappear, the money, the bank's going to keep your money if there's no beneficiary, and they're going to, you know, go to, but I said, like Satoshi, let's say hypothetically he or she died, that's gone. It's not like it's going to go back into the supply chain.
Yeah,
no.
So that's actually beneficial.
Yeah, that
increases that's actually value. Beneficial to people that have Bitcoin, because it increases the value. It's not like it's an ongoing cycle of I lose my Bitcoin and now it just goes back into the supply. Then you can buy my Bitcoin. I lose my Bitcoin. It's just like it's burnt.
Zero-sum game. Yeah.
Like I just burnt it.
Especially a whale like Satoshi. You're talking about, we've talked about that infinite supply of 21 million. Tomorrow, if that 21 million now turns to be 20 million, you're going to see this thing. I mean, this is really to the moon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. It's already got a tight enough supply. So any big whale, you know, makes a big move with it, that's what makes Bitcoin move. It's not, it's, you know, because it wound up in the newspaper. It's not, it's because somebody big is buying it or selling it. And the most important thing, we were talking about this before we started, is this belief system, right? We have an expression in economics, and I'm not trying to be rude or throw shade, but it's called the greater fool theory. And in a lot of cases, when you look at these cryptocurrencies, they operate under that theory. What does the next fool think it's worth? Because that's what the price is. That's where the price is. It's whatever the next person thinks it's worth. And if people think it's worth $100,000 and they own enough of it, that's what it's worth today. They could change their mind tomorrow. And a lot of this is about belief. And you have to understand that and accept that if you're going to be an investor in cryptocurrencies. That's just the game.
There you have it. Okay. All right. I think this was a very educational conversation that we had.
It's been a pretty impressive week in terms of crypto for us.
Yeah, for sure. We did a lot. For all you crypto enthusiasts that said that we never talk about crypto, leave us alone. We gave you education all week long.
Let's talk about muni bonds next week.
For sure.
Next week topic.
For sure. We're going real estate, buy condos in Arizona.
We're buying more data centers.
For sure. All right. Caleb, thank you. Always a pleasure whenever we get to link. Appreciate your time. Short notice too. I called you last week and asked you if you could do this, and You said no problem. So
as always,
it's a pleasure for me, and I appreciate that you sharing the platform. And again, you guys have done so much to educate people. It's really, it's an honor to be working with you, and I'm glad we're friends, and I'm happy to do this anytime.
Right, and I also appreciate the Master Marley picture in the back. Before we came on, we were talking about the great country of Jamaica. So I know you have a love for it as much as I do. So I appreciate that.
My pleasure. That actually came from Tuff Gong Studios in Jamaica about 40 years ago. I bought that poster. Still with me. So
one love. My guy. One love indeed.
One love. All right, my brother. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Kevin.
Appreciate it. Bye bye.
Okay, we can end this live.
Yeah, man.
Gentlemen, there's no more.
When you're with Amex Business Platinum, you have the card that helps you do more of what you love, like a flexible spending limit that adapts with your business. And with 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, going the extra mile for your business is even more rewarding. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Not all purchases will be approved. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/AmexBusiness.
As the summer sizzle fades, it's time to establish a wellness routine that's here to stay. Ritual is shaking up the supplement industry with their focus on traceable science and high-quality ingredients. They've got every base covered, from their clinically backed women's 18-plus multivitamin to their stress relief and sleep melatonin, both using first-of-its-kind BioSeries technology designed to optimize formula delivery. For a limited time, get up to 40% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast.